Hello, welcome to another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Jeff, how are you today?
I'm wonderful. Sal, yourself?
Outstanding.
Are you over the crud yet?
No, I've had this thing for about 2 weeks, and I sound like an old sick steer in a feedlot. I mean, hacking and coughing.
All right, well, we'll try to mute out your coughs.
It's going to be, it'll be carrying on.
That's good weather for a cold.
I can't believe with today's pharmacology that they can't knock this stuff. They've got me all jacked up on steroids and...
Wonder if we get the director of ag to come in and talk to us about how to prevent colds.
I bet he would come right here if we, Mr. Lamb, how are you doing, well, sir?
All of a sudden I feel a little uncomfortable being here, but yeah.
Well, before we jump in and returning guests, thanks for joining us today again. We have the Indiana State Director of Agriculture, Mr. Don Lamb. Always good to have you. But we got to have with a question of the day first. And I thought since this group, we have ended up being a little more mature and experienced. And so I thought, I was like, since we all go back, we're from the 1900s, right?
Way back
in the 1900s. In your career, Don, what is the one thing that's made the biggest impact on agriculture that you never expected to see? And then we'll go around the table.
Well, thanks for having me, for one thing. Love being down here. Love talking to you guys. And I would say, when I first think about that, it's always connected to GPS in some way or another. But when I was a kid, I remember actually being scared that, you know, someday robots are going to take over farming and I won't have a job. You know, I won't be able to, you know, there's nothing better to a farm kid than driving a tractor. And it's like, holy moly, you're going to take the best thing about farming away from me. And so, you know, as far as the thing that as a kid, I thought that could happen because you heard that it would. And it obviously was something I didn't look forward to as a kid. But the thing that I guess has surprised me is how fast it has come. And we truly do use robotics and we could talk forever about all the different ways that we're using GPS and using that technology, but truly seeing robotics work, truly seeing things that take the place of a human has surprised me at how quick it's come.
Surreal.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, that's true. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Jeff?
I think mine would be the Roundup Ready traits. That was, I worked for Monsanto at the time. So I was there on the ground rolling out, introducing those traits to the market. So, from the time we were putting out little 2-acre test plots and having to crop destruct them and I think looking back now that those GMO traits really, really took us to a level that we couldn't even fathom at the time. We knew it was going to be. We thought it'd be good, but it was way better than we expected.
So. I'll throw in just on that side. We grow seed beans for Pioneer, and we were one of the earliest ones to get any sort of full field, application of that. And I still remember that too. Being you're out there spraying Roundup on a field of soybeans, and you're just, you know, for the next 2 weeks, you drove by it every day to make sure they weren't going to die because it just seemed so unnatural.
It was fascinating. Yeah,
it really was. It's those guys, you know, the first time they load the sprayer, they're like, you're sure about this?
You're sure. We did the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, mine is probably along the same lines. And I remember it was back in the early 90s and we got our first fax machine at the office and we stood around it and watched that fax come through on the old heat paper,
thermal paper.
The thermal paper. Yeah. Thank you. And it was just like, it was magic. Mm-hmm. I mean, we couldn't believe that came over a phone line and we had a piece of paper to read. And
today, you know, there's still legal documents that they can only send by fax,
right?
Because that's still secure,
right?
Who would ever dream?
Yeah,
the full circle. And then, of course, we went through the Roundup Ready. That was the same experience. I mean, it was beyond what we could almost comprehend. We knew it was coming, but we did the same thing. Go buy it every day, and I can't believe it's not dying.
I guess a trivia question. Who still has a fax number on their business card?
Nope.
I haven't had one for years, but I remember when I used to add my fax number to my business card.
Yep.
And people would fax you stuff, and you'd get in, and like, oh, why didn't you call?
Exactly.
Well, let's jump in. Don, you've been on here before, but give us a little background, you know, kind of who you are and how you got here and And
Well, I got here partly because Jeff Jarrett and I went to college.
I was hoping that would come up.
I still think they're going to put a sign outside Purdue University. It says, you know, former college home of Don Lamb and Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah. So as far as today being here at Premier, that's really the connection. But as far as my background, I graduated from Purdue in 89, AggieCon. The only thing I ever wanted to do in my life was farm, and I've done that most of my life. So until it'll be 3 years ago in February now that I kind of stepped off the farm and into this role. So I still consider myself a farmer, and that's really what I do. And it's what I, someday I'll be doing that again, more on a full-time basis. But for now, I feel like I'm in a spot where hopefully I can make some positive impact. And, head of the Department of Ag is really, it's really an honor to be there, and it's an honor to work with the people that I get to work with. And, I'll probably talk about it today, but I mean, Team Ag Indiana, Indiana is very special. It really, really is. That's true. We've got a small Department of Agriculture, and it's partly possible because we have great teammates that I would put, Premier as one of those teammates, because we all work together. And then you can go into Farm Bureau and corn and soy and pork and poultry and beef and dairy and all the different organizations. But my job, yes, it's the Department of Ag, but it's really more like, where do we fit into agriculture in Indiana, and how do you keep everybody, walking on the same, in the same direction?
Sure.
I think, I can remember when, we heard you were going to take this role. And it was one of those that it's like the whole ag community in Indiana was like, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of, if they knew Don Lamb, it's like, hey, we've got somebody in there now that, has got a lot of common sense. He's a good farmer. He will do a good job for Indiana agriculture. So thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. And I remember those feelings. I heard that a lot. I remember that's some pressure too. It's like, oh my gosh, they expect something out of me. And I'll tell you, it takes a while to learn, where you're at. And I was with the Montana Director of Agriculture, excuse me, who's pretty new. And she said the thing that she's had to learn is, she says, am I the leader of the Department of Agriculture, or am I the leader of agriculture? And I'd never put it quite in those words, but she said what I've been thinking ever since it started. It's like, yeah, I've got really good people at the Department of Agriculture, and they do a great job of leading that organization. And I am leading that organization. But in the bigger picture, it's things like this that I really, that's my responsibility really, is to be with you guys. And it's to be, rubbing shoulders at Farm Bureau and rubbing shoulders at the different, with the different people and the support organizations that are out there for farmers, whether it's a somebody like you guys that sell and, or it's somebody who's just representing the commodities. It's incredible.
Yeah.
And so, I appreciate what you said. It's taken me 3 years. I'm still learning a lot every day, but it takes some time to figure out how you fit into a statewide system.
Seems like it's been longer than 3 years. I mean, but it has been a comfortable, it's been an easy, It sure seems like it's been an easy fit. And I think back to Jeff's point, all of us, when we have a chance to get somebody from agriculture, in either the regulatory or the legislature or part of the departments. I mean, that's just a big win, because there's just the connectivity and stuff that you put,
right.
You bring people together and associations together,
right.
And find the commonality.
Yeah. And you've got to look for those certain situations, because I couldn't be here if it wasn't for my brother. I couldn't be here if it wasn't for my nephews. There's got to be, you can't always do that, because farmers are farmers. Farmers are running a farm, and they can't just always walk away. And so I'm really blessed just to be able to do that.
But eventually your brother's going to want you to come back and pull your weight on the farm.
Yes. Exactly.
Actually, I'm not sure. We'll see. It could be the other direction. They're getting along pretty good without me. So we'll see. Yeah.
Well, as far as just an overview of the Indiana State Department of Ag, I mean, you said it's a small department, even though we're big in ag, kind of just give us an overview of what it looks like and
yep.
and kind of what its mission is. Yep. I guess maybe the formal mission and then kind of your mission.
Yeah. Well, it started in 2005, which is, we're the youngest Department of Ag in the country, which is kind of interesting. Most, you know, most states started a Department of Ag back about the time they started as a state.
Yeah.
And we were basically a committee underneath the Department of Commerce until then. And it wasn't that we didn't have an ag presence, but we didn't have a Department of Ag. And so Mitch Daniels started that in 2005. And then when I say we're small, I sometimes get a feeling like I'm a complainer because I go to national events and organizations and I rub shoulders with the other states around us. And boy, I can tell you, we are small. We are very, very small. That's just a reality. That's a truth. We have a very small budget and a very small number of people. We don't have the regulatory function that a lot of other states do. Board of Animal Health in Indiana takes care of those kinds of things. Office of State Chemist at Purdue takes care of that part of the regulatory function. Department of Health takes care of food safety type things, where in most states, those things are all integrated under the Department of Ag. And so the fact that we started late, we already had those things in place. And so we've really become more, you know, we're an advocate type organization. So that's actually a pretty good place to be. So that's the part where I don't want to complain about that, because I think we can just keep our focus on advocating for agriculture instead of the regulatory side of it, which is good. But at the same time, because we're so small, there are opportunities that we sometimes miss out on because we don't have the kind of people in place to be able to take advantage of a federal program or to put something in place that other states would. There's other states that spend a lot more money on international trade, for example. You know, we don't really have any funding specifically for international trade. We tag on to a lot of USDA trips and things like that, which is good. But we do compete with other states. And so there's a level there of me that says, that looks at this and says, we got to make sure that we're keeping up. And so there's some room for growth, but anyway, it's an efficient organization. FFA is part of our group. And I love that part of what we do. Again, I would tell you that's a group that gets a lot done for a little bit of money. And there's four people on our staff that run the whole state program, 14,000 and some students and all the coordination that goes to that. And so, FFA is something I'm proud of. Small, hardworking people, they work more hours than we can pay them for. And that's just the way it is. We've got agricultural economic development, which would do things about like international trade at Indiana Grown, things like that. That's the area where if I get some extra time to do something, that's where you plug in. That's where, you know, anything about agricultural economic development drives everything else. So you got to kind of concentrate. If you're thinking about growth, what do you want to do in the future? You want to help in agricultural economic development. And soil conservation is another division. It has its own appropriation, which is great. When I talk about us having a small budget, the legislature's done a good job of keeping that one funded and so important. You know, there's a lot of really good things that happen in that soil conservation division. Really proud of that. And then the last one would be the Grain Indemnity Fund, Indiana Grain Warehouse Licensing Agency. And that's one that we've had some challenges in the distant past now that still feed on us a little bit, we're still in a little bit of a legal issue. We're trying to,
fight the last war.
Oh yeah. And so, but I can tell you, and it not because of me, it really, the tide had turned before I came in, but that division is very good and very strong. And we're going to be talking to the legislature a little bit because they pulled some funding in the last session out of that really allow us to do a really good job of that. And if we don't get some of that funding back or really that entire funding back, we've got some challenges there to keep it going. You kind of put yourself back in the situation you were in before where you were underfunded and you know, there was probably some things that you could have done better, 10 years ago. And when you had trouble, okay, let's put some funding into this. Let's get some more people involved. Let's do it right. And we did that. But you're still kind of fighting that image battle of, you've had a problem here.
Yeah.
But got a great team. Clark Smith is leading that team and they're really doing a good job.
Okay.
Well, I guess as the Indiana State Department of Ag director, you've single-handedly have figured out a way to bring the USDA to Indiana. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. How'd you do that?
Yeah, well, it took a lot of work, a lot of time. Honestly, when I talk about Team Ag Indiana, when we heard that they were going to move, make these hubs, they're going to come out, they're going to be five of them across the country and nobody knew where. there was a group that got together, and it included people from Agrinovus, Elanco, Corteva, Purdue, Beck's Hybrids. There was a group of people that got together and just said, hey, if they're going to do this, why shouldn't it be Indiana? And I think that we probably did. In fact, I'm pretty confident to say our group really pitched it to the USDA more than anybody else did. And I think that's what made the difference. And I was a part of that group, but I definitely will not take the credit for doing it. Definitely not single-handedly. But again, it's this thing about Team Ag Indiana. If we weren't situated the way we were, you know, the State Department of Agriculture probably would have, you know, okay, well, we'll do this ourselves. You know, maybe we'll make a phone call. Maybe we'll do this. Maybe we'll do that. Because we operate the way we do across the industry in Indiana, you know, it took two or three phone calls and it's like, hey, yeah, let's get together. Let's talk about this. What can we do? And you know, you put together a pitch deck and I'll give a lot of that credit to Mitch Frazier at Agrinovus at that time. And Agrinovus is doing a good job now, even though Mitch has gone on. That same sort of thing is what an Agrinovus brought to us at that time, was the ability to coordinate a pitch like that. And so, yeah, we did do a pitch, and I am proud of it, because then we were chosen to be one of those hub locations.
How does that, when you do that pitch and when Mitch put it together there, is that like, here's the offices, here's the.
They've never given much detail. And so, you know, we've basically gone on assumptions. Okay, well, if we were going to do this, and there's about 2,500 people that they're saying they're going to move out of DC. Okay, it could be there to five locations. It could be 500 people. We don't know. It could be 200. It could be 1,000. We still don't know the answer to that. But we were just kind of making some assumptions like that. And then you start to make some assumptions about cost of living and, you know, what it could mean. And you kind of do the business plan for it. You know, if this was our business and we were thinking about doing this, what kind of impact could this have? And so we really put together a pitch deck based on that. You know, and it's still, whether that's what it's going to look like or not, we don't know. But it was impressive to them that we went to that kind of detail. You know, it's like here I think, you know, they're obviously going through those kinds of thoughts and those numbers probably much, much, much better than we were able to do. But just the idea that we thought about it that way, you know, when you think about, you guys deal with it all the time. What does a customer need? Yeah. You know, you're trying to solve a problem for a customer. Yeah. Well, in this case, you know, if we're trying to solve a problem for the USDA and help them give them some information, you know, help them. And so that's kind of the way we did it. And it worked.
Wow. What is the benefit if I'm an Indiana farmer and you keep hearing in the news, hey, USDA is coming in, what's that mean for Indiana agriculture?
Yeah. And again, we don't really know yet. But I don't see any way that it could be bad. That's one thing. So the opportunity for gain is definitely better than the opportunity for loss. And what it really means, A, you've got a little bit of economic benefit to the state because you're going to move some people in here and, you know, they're going to pay taxes and go to school and do all those things that economic growth does. And again, I go back to that agricultural economic development. I love it when it's agricultural economic development because ag dollars turn over a lot more in local communities, rural areas, things like that. So just the idea that it's an ag-based group is positive for us on that economic development side. And then I think it gets down to the things that you're going to rub shoulders with these people in Indianapolis. You know, you're going to get to know people. You're going to have a relationship with people. Basically, it just puts you that much closer to Washington, D.C. Instead of taking an hour and 20-minute plane ride and having to, you know, get around Washington, D.C. traffic and find the right office building, they're going to be here. And so if you need to talk to somebody about something, that will be easier. And then I would hope that those people would get engaged in the different things that go on in Indiana as well. And if they want to come to meetings and be speakers and be talkers and boy, to me, the hallway conversations could really gain us a lot in the long run, you know, building a relationship with somebody who's got some influence at the USDA, to the point where they'll listen to you and they'll think, man, that's a good idea. We ought to, you know, so that's really what it is. Right now, you know, my dad always said agriculture's art and science, and it's usually a lot more art than science. You know, you got to kind of, you can't put a black and white number on this and say, here's what it's going to mean to Indiana. But the art of it or the relationship part of it would tell you it's going to mean something.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we're going.
You know, I think we look to your role as somebody that's going to keep their finger on the pulse of agriculture. And I think the pulse just moved, we'll be moving closer to Indiana. I think that's an awesome benefit.
Yep. That's a great way to put it. Good.
Don, I want to back up a little bit. You said agricultural economic development. And those two words don't always go together, or at least not in people's minds. And usually it's either economic development or it's agriculture development.
Yep.
How do you balance in your role and influence this? You know, I have to just step in it and say what it is. We worry about losing farm ground to warehouses and just what fill in the blank, whatever takes it out of production, permanent.
Yep.
Not set aside, but permanently.
Yep.
How do we balance as a state that need for economic development that changes people's lives financially? I mean, breaks generational poverty, all the good things that come with people increasing their standard of living, but yet maintain what we're trying to do with what we have to have is food, fiber, feed, and energy. How do you do that and put those two words together?
Yeah, that's the best question, and it's the hardest question of the day. It's the thing that I've spent more time on than anything else since I've been in this position, is thinking about exactly what you just asked, and how do we build up agricultural economic development? Because we need, there's no doubt in a rural community, agriculture drives it, and we need good economic development because it means roads, it means schools, it means infrastructure, all those things that agriculture drives. So we know that. The other thing that's on economic development in a rural area is I want my kids to be able to stay where we are. I'd love to. I have my grandkids close to home, and if you live in rural Indiana and your kids are going to go off and find a good job somewhere, you know, if you don't have any opportunities, then most likely they're going to move away. And that's that family structure that we all enjoy and like and care for. So that's part of it. But then you back up and say, the reality is we've lost 350,000 acres from 2010 to 2022. 2% of our farmland went away in that period. And now we're going to track that number every 5 years officially. I think it'll be tracked more often than that, to be honest with you, as far as what we're really losing. So part of it is understanding what we really are losing and putting a number on it. Because we've all said, you know, since we were young, back in the 90s, we were saying the same thing.
Urban sprawl.
Yeah, urban sprawl. And so we've been talking about it. And then the other thing I would say is, there's no easy answer to it, and it should be local decisions. It really should, you know, come back to your the best politics, or whatever you call it, is local politics, and getting involved with your commissioners and your county council folks, and saying, what do we want? Having a good plan for your county. How do we want to grow our county? Because the growth is necessary, but then the agriculture plays such a big part of that. And so having those conversations and those relationships with your county commissioners, with your ag zoning, or with your zoning councils and things like that is so, so important. And, but all the easy answers have been answered.
Yeah.
There's nothing there, you know, and I'm big on local control and I'm big on property rights.
Yeah.
You know, and those two things make it really hard. That's where it makes it really clear. And the other thing I'd throw out, I'll just throw it out right now, is a word that I've been using a lot is the word platitudes. And I've been saying we should have a no platitude attitude. And a platitude is something that if you say it over and over, it pretty soon kind of loses its meaning. And we've been talking about urban sprawl. We've been talking about, this urbanization for a long, long time, to the point where most of us, we just say it and then we kind of walk on, you know, and, you know, a politician can say agriculture is the backbone of our economy, and it might even get some votes for doing that, you know, and it's true. It's a true statement. So what? You know, there's statements like that we make so many times, and it could have to do with sprawl. It could have to do with the economy. And yet what are we going to do about it? Yeah. What action should be taken? And when I think about the question you asked me on economic development and agriculture, the doing should be happening locally, you know, the doing, you know, but get active. Don't just, if you catch yourself saying something that you think might be a platitude, say, okay, if I believe this, I'm going to do something about it. And I'm going to have a conversation, and it's, boy, then it gets to be a negotiation. What do you really want?
Yeah.
So 2 months ago, I went to our local county economic development banquet. I have a banquet. They want to highlight what they did and stuff. And they had a great speaker come in and all this stuff. But I listened to every one of those speakers sitting there. I looked around the room. There's very few people involved in agriculture in that room. There were, I don't remember seeing any farmers.
Yep.
Everybody talked about, you know, the economic development, but agriculture was completely left out of the conversation. And we left there, and I'm telling my wife on the way home, I'm just like, they don't really care about, nobody there cares about, they're not even thinking about agriculture.
Yeah.
They're wanting to do all these things. And those are great things.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there, and in my mind, I'm going, how do I get involved? And when I do, if I do get involved, where can I get information to bring to them to tell our side of the story?
Yep.
So, you know, can I look to the ISDA to say, hey, I need some data to come back, you know, cause we got a lot of big farmers, they're paying a lot of tax, they're hiring a lot of people. There's a lot of, you know, there's just a lot of things going in to agriculture and what we bring to the table, but it's not, those aren't the big sexy things like a factory showing up hiring 100 people.
No, you're exactly right. And yes, come to the Department of Ag. Drew Sherman is the head of our economic development division. He can give you all sorts of information. We've got great information county by county, you know, and so we can really break that down. Purdue does a fantastic job of giving data about agriculture in a certain county as well. And the thing I would say is in almost every situation I've come across, it's just people don't know. They're not bad people. They don't have bad intentions. They just don't know. And so, you know, it's really just an educational opportunity. The light bulb comes on, you know, when you do explain this to people, and you don't get much of an argument if you have good data, if you can get the right data and make the right presentation about agriculture and how it affects a local community, you're not going to get an argument. They're not going to push back. They're going to actually be thankful. It's like, oh my goodness, here's something else that we do have in our county that we just didn't think about it. And it's you can put that into anything. We may talk a little bit later about MAHA and the Make America Healthy Again and how Indiana is trying to do that. And we've been working a lot with the Department of Health. And even on that, when you think about food and food safety, and healthy food, nutritious food, there's assumptions that people make about agriculture that are logical assumptions if you don't know anything, you know, and these are doctors. These are people that are very smart, you know, but they just assume that, well, we can just grow more fruits and vegetables, you know, if you don't know how agriculture works, you might just, why don't we just do that? Why don't we grow more local food here? And that's healthier for us. But they don't understand the food system and how it really works and how efficient it is and the way it is and how we can deliver really good, nutritious food at the lowest cost through, you know, that's really the way our system has been designed, except people might logically think we need to change the system. But once they understand the system, then you're on your team. Well, you know what? Agriculture is a good partner in this, and they're already doing great things. So many times if it's a local economic development issue or something like that, I've just found that it's people just don't know.
Yeah.
And they're waiting to be told.
I think the other thing that, I think economic development councils, by no fault of their own, they look at farm ground as undeveloped ground. And it's like, no, that is highly developed ground that farmer has spent a lot of money, blood, sweat, and tears developing, and he's raising a crop up of it every year. So I think we need to change the mindset that, no, it's not undeveloped ground. It's just not developed for something that you're thinking about.
Exactly. Yeah. It's already a resource.
Absolutely.
Don said something that really sticks is that it didn't quite put it this way, but a dollar in agricultural economic development isn't just a dollar. I mean, by the time we harvest the field and haul the grain and dry it and it goes, and some of it in different types of produce operations may go directly to the retailer, the grocery stores, but that takes, it stays in the system. There's a lot of transactions. It just doesn't happen, you know, where one thing is built and then it leaves.
Yeah.
It stays very local for a long time.
I call that the churning of dollars. We just constantly churn dollars in agriculture in a local community, and it does make a huge, huge difference. And then the one thing you have to realize too, because, you know, the truth is the truth, and there's two sides to every story. It is really hard for a local economy. It's really hard for agriculture to completely compete in a local economy against something like a development. When you put together all the construction, when you put together all the different things that go into building this new facility, this new building, adding employment, you know, when you think about the amount of acres and that one thing that's being developed, we're never going to be able to say that 100 acres, even though we have all this churning of dollars that's real and people need to recognize that there's a 100 acre parcel here that's going to change from ag to this development of some sort. It's also going to be hard. The reality is, to a local economy, it's going to be hard to compete with that. As far as the tax that comes back in.
Sure.
That. Yeah. I mean, what you guys do when you, if you were to build a facility and do things, you know, you're an agricultural facility. So to me, you're part of the story of ag, but you could very easily be some other business that's not connected to ag, making that kind of investment. It would still be positive for your local community. So that's one thing that ag folks, we have to recognize too, is that it's not always just these dumb people that make dumb decisions. You know, there's smart people making good decisions that might not lean towards agriculture at times.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. It's give and take. So, but you got to have those relationships so you can have the conversation rather than to kind of put this person in a box and they put us in a box and we just never really talk about
it. You know, I think that was the thing that, when I left that meeting that night, it was, you know, the ag retailers weren't there. Mm-hmm. The farmers weren't there. Mm-hmm. The trucking companies that move these commodities in and out, mm-hmm. they weren't there. The shops, the mechanics that work on all the trucks and stuff, you know, farmers do a lot of their own, but there's, you know, you can go by any of the truck shops and there's a farmer semi, there's an ag retailer mm-hmm. semi sitting there. So again, we're churning a lot of dollars in that local mm-hmm. economy. But we don't have a seat at the table when it comes to economic development. And I'm pretty sure we're going, well, we're not going to develop our ground, so we don't need to go to that meeting.
Right. Yeah. So. Well, and we haven't talked about the LEAP development up in my backyard in Boone County where the state.
When I go visit my grandkids, I get to see that.
And oh my goodness. Because many times.
That's a good example. Let's talk about that.
Well, so many times it's like the frog in the boiling water where in most of our communities this happens where, and then all of a sudden you kind of wake up and go, wow, we've lost a lot of farmland, you know, over time. The thing that LEAP has done, and I'll say it this way, maybe as a positive side for agriculture is it wakes you up. You know, when you see it happen that quickly and you know, at that extent and that many acres get being turned over at one time, it starts to make you think, whoa, that makes a big difference, not just to the local economy, but to agriculture. And there really is a shift there. And you know, gosh, it's between Lilly has made about a $14 billion investment in two different sites in Boone County. Wow. Meta, I want to say it's a $6 billion investment. That's $20 billion.
Yeah.
I think the biggest before 2 or 3 years ago, the biggest investment anybody ever made was like $3 billion. Yeah. And here's $20 billion in one spot. And so, you know, there's the question, economic development wise, wow, somebody, there's a lot of good things that will come out of that for the state and even for Boone County, but it completely changed Boone County all at once. And then it makes you ask that question, is this a good change?
Absolutely.
You know, yeah. And or not. And so it's been the driver of a lot of conversations on the water. You know, you put this in, you don't have enough water to do what you want to do. Conversations on power. We don't have enough power to do what we want to do. And it's really highlighted the fact that as growth happens, it needs to happen with some planning. And it needs to happen in a little different fashion. But if there's a positive to the LEAP development, as far as I'm concerned, it's the fact that it has really got the conversations going.
And it happens quick, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's happened quick. And it's been a hard, I can tell you, it's been a hard thing for the people of Boone County. It's pitted a lot of people against each other and against the state and against this and that. And, you've got good arguments on both sides. This is a good thing. And this is a tough thing.
When it comes to dozers and pan scrapers and stuff like that, I'm guessing that the rest of the state is in a deficit because they're all parked in Boone County.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredible. I mean, if you just to watch it happen is pretty impressive to see what they can do, but yeah, I've never seen anything happen that fast.
Yeah. How many acres was it roughly?
Well, I mean, it kind of goes all over the board. There was about 9,000 acres completely involved in it. Now it's not going to end up. And, you know, you've watched this happen. You know, we've changed administrations in the middle of this thing. And, you know, the last administration was very aggressive on this, really got that ball rolling. This administration, saw that this was a problem, saw the problems of it. And they've swung the pendulum back pretty hard the other way. In fact, you know, I can tell you right now that the IEDC really wants to be out of the land development business. That's not what they want to do. And so they're putting their efforts towards, you know, throttling that back as much as they can. But here's the problem. You've already bought, there's already still some land there that's not developed that the state owns, that IEDC owns. You got to develop it. You can't, you know, if you're the IEDC, you're not going to sell it back as farmland and lose all that money for the state, you know, even though they didn't start the process, you've been handed this thing. All the people are gone. All the people that were on the starting side of it are not there. All the people that are in the decision-making spots now are new people that didn't start this process, but they've got to deal with it now. And what do you do? And so, and I can tell you, I give this administration a lot of credit. They've allowed me and the ag department to be really involved in these conversations. And, because it's hard, you pull back, then you've got people who expected to get out, you know, expected to be bought out, expected to be not just, and more on the homeowner side than the farmland side, but you've got people that this development's happening all around you and you'll think you'll get out. Well, then the money stops, you know, it stops because we changed administrations and now there's no money to get them out. And now they're stuck right next to this development that they never saw coming. And so, you know, those are the kind of stories that, you know, make you realize local control is very good.
Yeah.
And those conversations are very good. This happened, you know, really more at a state level. And there was no input from those local people that were affected most by it.
Wow.
Yeah. That's, you know, you see, cause you know, you talk about the footprint of where but then there's, you know, I see these big water lines going in and these houses that are abandoned, I guess they're going to tear them down. Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, that's kind of a, you know, that's a, I guess a casualty of the war of
the original collateral damage.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yep.
Don, how can the listeners, if they want to find out more about Indiana State Department of Ag initiatives and just current events and news, where's a good place for them to go to
learn? Website, come to the ISDA website. And I will throw out and say, too, that one of the governor's initiatives was to start an ag portal. And that actually was one of the first bills he signed in the last session to say that the Department of Ag will put together an ag portal, which when I say website and I say portal, I'm a farmer trying to keep up with all these terms, but you know, there's a portal is something you come to get lots of information. And it could be, if I'm interested in starting a new business here, how would I do this? If I want to expand my hog operation, how would I do this? If I want to, you know, it could be questions about zoning. It could be questions about, there's all sorts of things. The governor would love for us to have a one-stop shop where if you're involved in agriculture and you need to know something, you'd start here. So that's being developed, and I'm not saying that's what our website is today. We have a website. You can find some phone numbers and you know, call me. It's a work
in progress.
yeah. But that's, you know, that's the website. The portal has not, and the, like so many things, they said here at Department of Ag, we'd like you to start this portal, and we say if that's good.
We've got three people.
Yeah, we have one in the IT area, and there's no money attached to it. And you know, you think about a real portal that's an ongoing living thing like that. It's going to take a staff just to run that portal, and it's going to take, you know, somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million to build it in the first place if you're doing it right. And you're connect, you know, these things are not, you guys know with technology how if you're really to set up something like that, what kind of investment that would take. So at the moment, you know, and the governor's office, we've been talking to them and they're going to work with us. And, you know, I think over the next year to 2 years, there will be some sort of funding that will be dedicated to it. They realize right now we're just kind of working with our hands tied behind our back, trying to make this happen. But communication is so important. And I think it'll get a lot better in the next 3 years, but it's going to take some time.
With great concept because those answers are out there,
yep.
But they're in so many different spots.
Yep.
And if you can consolidate them into one one-stop shop where you can go in and find out about expanding a hog operation and just the flow charts and things. Yeah, that's a neat concept.
Yeah, I think it'll be great.
Yeah.
What's one thing that you want to accomplish as director of ag that maybe you haven't had a chance to get there yet, or maybe it's in the works? What's the one thing that Don Lamb wants to say? When I leave here, I want this to be my legacy.
Yeah. That's a really good question. And it's very timely because I just said this to our staff. We have two all staff meetings a year. So you think about our staff, we have 65 people, but many of them are scattered around the state in the soil conservation area or in the green indemnity area or something like that. So there's only two times a year that we actually have everybody together in one spot in person. And so we just had this meeting maybe a month ago now. And I told this story when I started this job in the last administration. There's a man named Earl Goode. And Earl Goode was the chief of staff to Governor Holcomb. And Earl Goode is an older gentleman, very much behind the scenes, never wanted to be a speaker or anything. You know, he was usually there, but you saw he's over kind of on the sidelines. But he was the chief of staff for Mitch Daniels. He was chief. I mean, he's had so much experience. And so I picked his brain a little bit one day. I said, hey, can I come get, you know, half hour of time with you? And early in my time here in this department. So I went over, and he has this little office right behind the governor's office. And I sat there with him for a half an hour. And his point to me was, find one thing. Don't get yourself spread out. If you're in government, everything happens in pretty quick cycles, and you need to, find one thing that you want to accomplish and concentrate on that. Cause if you get yourself too thin, you're just not going to accomplish much of anything. And when you're a small department like we are, and when you're trying to do as much as we can see in front of us, it's hard to do that because, it's almost feel like I'm still a farmer. You know, it's like every day there's more to do than I can get done. I mean, we could always do this. We could always do that. There's always these choices to make. So it's hard to get to that one thing, but I'm coming a long way around to answer your question to say, my goal would be that there is a very good foundation for the future of the Department of Agriculture. Like we're building a foundation of what it can look like in the future. Because there is more that the Department of Ag could and should be doing in Indiana. I think we've got the structure that we could be the best structure in the whole country because of the way we started. We're small. We can kind of build it the way we want. I'm a small government guy. I don't want the Department of Ag to be this big government behemoth. But at the same time, there are things that we need to put in place so that we can do the best that we can do for agriculture. And I think about economic development. I think about international trade and those sorts of things. And so to me, I know it's kind of a general thing when I say we're going to build a foundation, but the one thing is to do that. And then each of our divisions, those five divisions I talked about, are building their own little one thing. You know, what's the one thing I want to work on? Because that will be the best part of laying the foundation. And we've got some really good people. Really in the department. I just love the people I work with. They're really good. And so you've got this small team that's doing all this. And if they can help build a foundation in each one of their areas so that 10 years from now, we're not talking about Indiana being a really small Department of Agriculture, not really, our budget, we're working on $300,000 less today in our general fund than we did in 2007.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. I mean, in real dollars, that's like $3 million. We're operating on about half the money that we had in 2007. You know, started in 2005, built up a little bit to 2007. And then if you just watch the, and it's partly because we're quiet. We get the job done. And so any programming that was in place back then has gone away over time, kind of like that frog in the boiling water, because as budgets get cut and inflation happens, but there's nothing to take over for inflation. You just keep doing more with less. And so we've got this group of people who are working really hard, but we don't really have a lot of programming dollars for them to do things with.
Yeah.
You know, we're mostly building relationships, which is good.
Well, it's efficient. Right. I mean, that's you can make a bigger impact. You look at some of the other states, whether it's Minnesota or those places where, the ag departments was started back in the 30s almost, when everything started. Well, that makes sense that they kept scaling and scaling and scaling. But it's kind of neat how with Indiana they put the regulatory pieces ahead of then kind of so I think that that's probably a stronger once you get through it.
We're in a good spot. And since you brought up Minnesota, I'll just say I love Tom Peterson's the director in Minnesota. He's a great guy. I look at that as an example of, I mean, Minnesota kind of follows their state government. Right now they've got all these issues with the Smallians and the different things that have happened in that state. Their Department of Ag is huge. Huge. I mean, they've got over 1,000 people. Wow. Their budget's 10 times our budget. No doubt. I couldn't tell you exactly the number, but I don't want to be like that, and it's not that they're doing wrong things. It's just the system was built that way for them. this system's been built this way for us. We're still kind of riding on the Mitch Daniels heels of this thing, and which is a good place to be.
Yeah.
You know, you start it the right way, you start it conservatively. And then, but we're to a point now where we need to build a foundation because we're kind of down to the foundation because of inflation, because of a lack of increase of budget over the years and all this, we're kind of down to the foundation. Here's where we are. And we've got these great relationships with Team Ag Indiana, with you guys and with every, you know, people across the state. Now, what do we do to build it up? And 10 years from now, it should look different, you know, than it did 10 years ago. We were having the same conversation. So that's a platitude. I don't do anything about this, it's just a platitude. I can say it over and over, but if I don't do anything about it, then it doesn't mean anything.
What's the best way for the ag industry to help get a little oil for this? We need to create the squeaky wheel so we can get some oil for it. What's the best way that as Premier Ag and the ag industry, we can help ISDA get that funding?
I think it's knowing enough about what I just said to have conversations with legislators. I mean, it's going to come down to funding and what kind of role they put agriculture in, and it could mean the governor's office or lieutenant governor's office. But you know, we've got a really good relationship with both those offices. So that part is solid. It's going to come down to somebody being willing to carry a bill sometime that would actually change the way things are done. Again, all politics is local. And so, you know, get to know your local legislator and then have that conversation with him. You know, it just doesn't seem like, you know, are we doing enough in agriculture?
Yeah.
And because if they dig into that question at all, they will find out, no, we're not.
Is the next budget 27?
27.
Okay.
So in 26, we're going to do a few things for ag that might be a little bit of this foundational piece I've been talking about. 27 is the next opportunity to have an increase in funding. And by the 27 budget, we would sure love to have a really good plan for, you know, if we're going to spend a little more money in agriculture in Indiana, here's a great place we can get return on investment.
Cool.
I have no doubt whatever we can come up with will be good return on investment. It won't just be quote unquote government spending. It'll be something that we can get a return on.
It's awesome.
That's good.
All right. I know there's more, Jeff. Do you have... Should we let him go for the day?
That's probably a good one to end on.
He's probably got a lot more responsibilities up in Indianapolis. He's going to have to head back up that way.
Yep. Staff meeting this afternoon. And it'll be good.
Don, we really appreciate you talk about relationships. And that's one of the best things about agriculture is that you got such commonality amongst people that are like-minded on so many things. And we appreciate the hard work that you're doing in the State Department of Agriculture. And thanks for coming down. I know you and Jeff have a lot of stories, and I'd like to hear some of those. We could do a podcast on some of those.
We probably don't need to tell those stories.
But thanks for joining us, and we really appreciate having you.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate being on.
Thanks, Don.
That's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thank you all very much.